Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
It's Tuesday, 3 September. Spring is here. I'm Kieran Whitten, coming out to you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg, standing in for Simon Brown. I hope the waves are good this morning, Simon. Today on the show, Carmen Mpilwane, independent analyst on Bidvest full-year results, continues to perform consistently. James Bennett, global equity analyst at Anchor Capital, on the investment case surrounding cybersecurity. And then lastly, Dr. Adrian Saville, Professor of Finance, Strategy and Economics at the Gordon Institute of Business Science and Director at the Tenet Group, on the investor sentiment in South Africa following the formation of the GNU and how he is reading the current environment. Economic data out, South Africa GDP, Bloomberg consensus looking for 0.4% growth following a 0.1% decline in the first quarter. Improvements in electricity supply and easing inflation pressures looking to drive growth a bit higher. But the positive effects of the election outcome, rolling interest rates as well as a stronger rand likely to only be properly felt in the third quarter. And we chat to Adrian Saville about where he sees growth potentially going. Company news out as well. ShopRite full year results out. Aspen full year results as well as Motus. And morning headlines from Business Day. Petrol and diesel prices coming down tomorrow. Petrol getting slashed 92 cents a litre. And then morning markets. The US opened today after being closed yesterday for Labor Day. The S&P is red, down 0.2%. NASDAQ down 0.3%. The East is all red. Sydney, Tokyo, and Hong Kong all down. Hong Kong down 0.4%. Tencent up 0.1%, helping to carry our market a bit. Commodities, flats, really. Gold is flat. Brent is up 0.4% with Middle East tensions continuing to simmer. The Rand at 1786, with 1768 being the key level to watch there. It's bounced off there a few times. Bitcoin up 2.5%, 59,127. And the top 40 opening call is a green open, up 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Now speaking to Carmen Mpilwane. Thank you for the early morning, Carmen. Bidvest full-year results out yesterday, slightly beating consensus, $122 billion in revenue, 6.7% higher, earnings also higher. They are optimistic about their growth prospects due to the positive developments in South Africa as well as a better environment in the UK and Europe. What did you make of the results?
Yeah, good morning, Kieran. I think it's one of those rare ones where you are excited when things are just normal. So that was definitely a positive. As you've mentioned, strong growth in both top line and the HEPS. Strong cash generation, which I think is a something that's quite important, especially in the current environment. But as you mentioned, very diversified portfolio for this group. Also had significant corporate action over the period, having 11 acquisitions, which not surprising, I think, to anyone who follows Bidvest. Year to date, up almost 14%. So looks to be good so far.
Yes, and 75% around the EBITDA comes from South Africa. It's got a diversified portfolio, as you've said, both in terms of business units and geography. At a 13 PE, it's slightly above its five-year average. Is this a share that you like, given the options currently available in South Africa?
So you hit the nail on the head there. It's definitely trading at, as you say, just slightly above its long-term PE average of 13. So at the moment, our view is that we are neutral on the stock. It's given quite a bit. And so not to say that the risk is high, but there may be better prospects elsewhere to invest the money. But having said that, if you need a stable portfolio or stability within, this will be one of those that you'd look to.
Yes, for sure. And just the way they are also looking to streamline their business now is definitely something that's commendable. Carmen Mpilwane, thank you for the early morning time. We will leave it there.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Now joined by James Bennett, Global Equity Analyst at Anchor. Thank you for the early morning time, James. We're chatting cybersecurity. I recently read the Allianz Risk Barometer report that highlighted it as the number one concern for financial institutions in 2024. And it's definitely a secular theme to back. It's something that we like at Anchor. And we know that cybersecurity is important for corporates. And what is the investment case for corporates based on this in the cybersecurity sector? And by extension, I mean, because corporates need this, why is it a sector that we like?
Yes, good morning, Kieran and the listeners. So I've followed the cybersecurity sector for over 15 years and I've always found it to be a fascinating industry. So although the industry has become more widely followed by financial market participants in recent years, the core thesis behind investing in the sector has pretty much remained unchanged. You know, throughout the years, cybersecurity has remained pretty mission critical for corporates of any size. And if anything has changed, it's that the mission to protect digital and even physical assets has become increasingly critical each year that goes by. There's actually an interesting analogy between investing in the cybersecurity and defense industries. The defense industry offers many attractive properties such as mission critical and resilient demand at all times. But many potential investors balk at the perceived killing aspect that goes with the defense industry. So in a sense, the cybersecurity industry offers many similar qualities as the defense industry, but without negatively impacting human lives. In fact, many of the world's leading cybersecurity companies actually count governments as part of their client bases, even though it is a relatively small part of their total earnings. So the demand for cybersecurity products is extremely robust and defensive and not subject to the economic swings that many other industries experience.
Yeah, that demand is something that is definitely not going away anytime soon. The same report said there's been a 50% increase in ransomware insurance claims from 2022. Again, this highlighting the growing importance of this. And now from the corporate's perspective again, it's obviously very critical to protect against the threat of bad actors. Why are we hearing more about cyber breaches now than we used to in the past?
Sure. So years ago, cybersecurity was mostly defined by on-premise physical firewalls. So there was an on-premise network with a physical firewall to protect it, and anyone behind the firewall was considered to be safe. But of course, with the advent of the internet, you know, email, smartphones, the cloud, work from home, even work from anywhere, and the Internet of Things, the so-called attack surface available to these threat actors has really grown exponentially. So the industry has moved on to zero trust, a type architecture, which is a somewhat loose term that many in the industry now lay claim to, which really says that no one is to be trusted, not even the CEO of a company. Because after all, what if it's not the CEO who's emailed you a request, but someone else who's assumed their identity?
Yeah, we see this again all the time. Identity theft is very prevalent. And there's lots of opportunity by extension in this industry, but it is a very fragmented industry. And what do you think about individual point solutions versus maybe some of the wider platform players that offering that you can cover more of your company with? Is one necessarily better than the other? And along with that, perhaps you can maybe introduce some of the key players in this industry to us.
Sure. So the average corporate in the US uses about 40 different cybersecurity vendors, some even more. And this has led to a pretty complex sprawl of products. And it's created a tug of war between using best of breed point solutions, all going with a platform whose products, you know, integrate into a couple or even a single operating system. There really is no such thing as the best cybersecurity company. Each of the bigger players has their strengths and weaknesses. The industry is highly competitive with, you know, many participants adamant that their offerings are the best in the industry for each specific purpose. So there has been a real clamor for the best of breed mantle. Remember that corporate buyers don't want to settle for second best when it comes to a cybersecurity. But I just think given this complexity, the needle has started to tilt a bit more towards the bigger platform players. And I would argue probably the best examples of a platform offering are Palo Alto and Fortinet. Mm. But even companies like CrowdStrike, Zscaler, and even a SentinelOne are laying claim to a platform offering. So Palo Alto is the largest independent cybersecurity company in the world, yet only has about 6% global market share. Microsoft is considered to be the biggest player in the industry, but because it bundles a lot of its cybersecurity products into its broader software, people take its estimates of about $25 billion in cybersecurity revenue with a pinch of salt, and it's unclear whether they could achieve that level of revenue if their cybersecurity products were sold on a standalone basis.
I think you've definitely mentioned some names there that people are familiar with, and I think people will be quite surprised that Microsoft really just does seem to do it all. They do have quite a decent cyber offering, as you've highlighted. But there's clearly not one company that we can say is the best in everything at cybersecurity. It's not as simple as that. But now from an investment manager's perspective, which one really stands out for you?
Sure. So, you know, notwithstanding what we just said about there not being one best company in the industry, I've always admired the way Fortinet, a US-based company, runs its business. It has a reasonable PE for a US growth tech stock. It's still run by its original founders from 20 years ago. It's highly profitable. Its free cash flow margin puts it in the top 5 to 10% of the S&P 500 index. On that measure, it's got a strong balance sheet. And they've always found a good balance between growth and profitability. You know, it's got a high return on capital employed, and that's because they mostly have built their business through internally developing their assets and have made very, very few small bolt-on acquisitions. Their stock-based compensation is one of the lowest in all of tech. And then even buybacks, they do very judiciously, you know, from time to time, only when the share price has fallen.
And I think it's given us a chance to get into a share like this quite a few times, because after earnings, these things, it's either a hit or a miss, and it really does give you a chance to get into them. And then James, lastly, people would have no doubt heard about the IT outage a few weeks ago caused by CrowdStrike. It disrupted many industries, everything from computer software to flights to transactions being halted. This was actually not a cyber breach, as I understand it, but it was a software update. What exactly happened here? Are we likely to see it again? And how material, in your view, is this to the cyber industry as a whole?
Sure. So remember that CrowdStrike is a truly world-class business, which actually makes the outage they caused even more perplexing. And as you correctly said, it wasn't actually a cyber breach, but an update that they rolled out that instantly bricked every Windows machine that it touched. So it's hard to understand why standard best practice wasn't employed, such as testing on a few machines internally first and then incrementally rolling it out in stages. And then some of the tech world has even gone a bit further and questioned whether it points to deeper issues within the company. But at this stage, we have no way of knowing whether that's true or not. I just think given CrowdStrike's stellar track record before this incident, we have to assume it's highly unlikely that this exact issue will ever happen to them again. There is likely to be some slowing of their signing of new business for the next few quarters, but I'm sure that in a couple of years' time, the world would have mostly forgotten about this incident from a CrowdStrike perspective.
Yeah, I'm sure it won't be the last, but the industry definitely moves on. We leave it there. Thank you, James Bennett, for your early morning time.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
Attention all investors and finance enthusiasts. Get ready for the annual Money Summit, Africa's largest and most influential savings and investment event. Join me, Jeremy Maggs, on Tuesday, the 10th of September at the Sandton Convention Centre as we connect with over 100 top chief executives and industry leaders across 20 exciting conferences and forums, all in one incredible day. Secure your spot now. Register online at www.moneysummit.co.za for free with the code MONEYWEBGUEST. This is your chance to be part of Africa's premier savings and investment event. Don't miss it.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Now joined by Dr. Adrian Saville at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. Thank you for the early morning time, Adrian. So we're going to be chatting a bit about the Government of National Unity in South Africa. From what I see, load shedding is obviously reduced. There's been the Electricity Amendment Bill operations, a Transnet on proving the positive headlines in the last 30 days. Markets are on the up and on the ground. I see positive developments. Ellis Park this weekend being a pretty good example. It all feels a bit weird as a South African. Am I being too optimistic? How are you reading the South African investment landscape following the formation of the GNU? And in your view, has it fundamentally changed the materials?
You know, I think one of the things that we are at risk of is letting our cynicism, based on, you know, admittedly, you know, based on decades and more of experience, but let our cynicism dominate perspective. The backdrop is the South African economy has struggled to deliver any form of meaningful growth since 2010. You know, let's call that the better part of 15 years. And what we're experiencing under a government of national unity is first an element of unity. And of course, you know, there are pockets of disagreement, there's skirmishes. A day doesn't go by where there isn't a cause for some concern about the unity holding. But on balance, this unity government is performing better than most had anticipated. And then, as you point out, against that backdrop, we've got real improvements, regardless or notwithstanding, you know, our concerns or caution around GNU. We've got what evidently are material improvements happening in the network industries, and in particular the critical energy and transport cluster. And here we are on day 150-something of uninterrupted energy. Next up is Transnet under Michelle Phillips.
There we go. And like you've said, South African cynicism has seemed to hamper us in the past. I saw an Investec report on how we are some of the most negative people when it comes to expectations. But now, speaking of this going forward, I've seen GDP forecasted to grow at 1.2% next year. I've seen some optimistic forecasts a few years out of 3% growth. Can we get to this 3% number in your view? And what are some of the structural issues present in the economy that may be slightly more difficult to overcome?
Well, you know, there's some very near-term things that are going to give the economy a little bit of a tailwind. Work that we've been doing at the Tennant Group, referencing the two-pot system, is going to translate into some improvement in consumption spending. Now, you know, I think that, you know, we need to take that really for what it is. It's an artificial stimulus. It's not sustained. The fact that we've got the uninterrupted energy supply is improving confidence. That's not artificial, and that looks sustainable. And so we start to move into an improved structural landscape. Going back to the articles we've been producing at Tennant, you know, referencing the changes in the retirement pension fund system, here there is evidently a material structural improvement underway, and it's an endeavor to reverse South Africa out or lift South Africa off a very low savings investment base. I would venture that is one of the single most important structural components. Get that right. Get South Africa back to its long-established historical pattern of a high teens rate of savings and investment, even early 20% rate of savings and investment, and then we are in a high 2 or early 3% economic growth rate.
I know you've spoken previously about the Singapore model of governance. You've been quite a fan. So over and above what we have spoken about, what would you like to see more of? Where should this new government focus its limited resources to continue increasing investor and consumer confidence and ultimately making our businesses competitive internationally?
Well, you know, the word that you use there is confidence. And what people need to be confident is they need to believe. They need to understand the rules of the game. They need to be certain about the direction of travel. And here I think South Africa has regularly got into the business of being its own worst enemy. Some obvious things to do would be policy clarity, policy transparency, policy stability. We have long-standing question marks over accountability that remain long after the acknowledgement of the damages done and the actions committed under state capture. You know, that accountability has to happen in order for people to be confident in the rule of law, in established property rights. And South Africa, I think, also needs to recognize that we aren't special in the eyes of world's investors or in the eyes of South African investors, that we are competing globally for scarce and valuable capital. Mm.
So that leads to my final question quickly. In terms of asset allocation, do you think, I mean, a lot of international asset managers have closed their emerging market divisions. Do you see a future where South Africa does become an international investment destination again, and perhaps one where maybe local asset managers even look to repatriate funds, or am I being too optimistic again?
I don't think that that's too optimistic. It's well within reach that South Africa could lift our position in global tables. We've got well-established, well-functioning capital markets, good property rights, a sophisticated banking system. The network industries, you know, even with modest repair, will put us right at the front of South Africa being one of the most attractive markets, Pan-Africa. We've recently produced a report for RMB in partnership with RMB, their Where to Invest in Africa report, where South Africa ranks high, you know, notwithstanding the challenges. So absolutely. And then, you know, always in an investment discussion, we put in the question of valuation, you know, not just, you know, how strong can the economy grow, but is it attractively priced? And on that score, South Africa ranks compellingly attractive.
There we go, ladies and gents. That is Adrian Saville, Dr. Adrian Saville this morning. Thank you for your time. And that's it for today. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app at 6:30 a.m. Thanks to the team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, to you for the listeners and my guests for their time. My name is Kieran Whitson, and this is MoneyWeb Now. See you tomorrow.
This show was brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with our investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.